No. Okay. No. See, and here's the thing. I was hoping you would say something so I could start annoying you, but with the other theme. I was going to be like, nee. Nee, nee, nee.
From Family Guy.
Nee, nee, nee.
This is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to The Drift Space.
Initiating neural engine in 3, 2, 1. Hello, it has been a little while. Have y'all been alrighty then? Welcome back to the Drift Space. I'm your host for the evening, Rebecca.
And I'm G.
JR is not joining us today because he is under the weather and, well, just screw the weather. So,
yeah, he's not, he wasn't really sounding himself. He gave us a preview of how his voice was sounding and we were like, eh, okay, he needs time to recover. We wish he was here. We know he'd have.
But GJ, I'm always here.
Some words to offer on our topic today, but in the meantime, this is going to be one of our, not our first, it's not our first kind of sibling episode, because we did the Beast Wars episode, right?
Right. I thought you were going to say, yeah, sibling rivalry. It's like, oh, we have plenty of those. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, but that's, I guess I was going to say this is going to be our first sibling episode, but it's really not. But it is another sibling episode.
Yeah, in a way it is. And for once, we're not going to be talking about Beast Wars, nor Dragon Ball Z, nor my perfectly normal obsession with Piccolo, although I could. I mean, I could.
It's not normal.
I can go into deep detail.
How we kind of made fun. I think you made fun. Now I really wish JR was here. Okay. So how we used to make, we kind of made fun of the whole Piccolo shipping with, what's her name, Janet?
Yeah.
And how many pieces of art have you released now?
Well, let me think.
Shipping those two?
Let me think. Well, hey, others sent more. They shipped more.
I don't care.
You make me sick.
You're a hypocrite. That's...
Hey, I never said I was against the shipping. Okay.
No, you... no, I'm not buying that.
Okay, anyway, but in all seriousness, we are going to be talking about something that, honestly, I have been wanting to talk about for a while now. And in light of both of our anniversary of the first episode of The Drift Space and the season 3 that is a few days ahead of us, we'll be talking about Star Trek Picard season 2.
Yeah. And Rebecca, I'm glad you brought up that this was Star Trek Picard was our first episode on The Drift Space.
Exactly.
That was a while ago. And, you know, it was funny going back and listening to that and being like, whoa.
Yeah. I want to say thank you, whoever edited that audio, because you really cut out a lot of I did. And seriously, I commend you for that.
We're a little bit better today. Not entirely. There's still plenty of us, but
yeah. Second of all, so far, this has been my favorite season of Picard so far.
Well, there's only been two, so.
Well, yeah. I prefer the second season over the first season. I'm sure I'm going to change my mind once I watch the third season.
We'll get there. We'll get there. But let's... Focusing on the second season, I have to agree with you right out of the gate that this was a stronger season.
Yes.
I don't think it entirely fixed everything it could have. There are still some narrative issues that I have with it, but it is a much stronger season than what I found to be kind of a messy first season and something that really struggled to stick any sort of landing by in the back half of that season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's a question. Are we more satisfied with how this season fixed certain loopholes from the previous season, or are we still in the dark about some things? And here's a synopsis of, how do you say that? Synopsis or synopsis?
Synopsis.
Okay, I said it right. Great. in season two, the retired Admiral Jean-Luc Picard finds himself on board the newest iteration of his former ship, the USS Stargazer. Then he confronts his old nemesis, the Borg, who take control of the vessel, forcing Picard to initiate auto-destruct before they infest the fleet. After the explosion, Picard finds himself face-to-face with his old adversary, Q. The omnipotent being's powers are waning as he draws closer to death, but he has one more lesson to teach the former captain of the Enterprise. Q alters the future of Earth into a totalitarian regime, forcing Picard, Seven, Raffi, and Rios to go back to the year 2024 and right Q's wrongs. On the way, Picard will face ancestors, old friends, a new faction of the Borg, and another Dr. Soong, willing to drive a wedge between the prosperity of the Federation and a future filled with fascism.
So, you asked, if this kind of fixed things from season one. And it didn't necessarily, there's nothing about season one that it fixed. It just kind of ignored.
Yeah.
This isn't the first time that the Star Trek franchise has done this, and it's worked out for them. I mean, listen, are any of us crying over the fact that Star Trek VI didn't mention any of the events in Star Trek V at all?
Oh, that's a serious question.
No, row your boat.
Row.
E-I-E-I-O.
I wish JR and Dave were here.
Yeah, me too.
Dave who?
But yeah, I'm okay with the fact that this season just went ahead and said, okay, this is what they did in season one. The prior showrunners had their way, and that's that. Let's just go in a different direction. And I'm honestly satisfied with that. It doesn't try to walk back the plank, you know? It doesn't try to necessarily fix anything that we didn't like. Like, you know, Picard is now, what, like an android, essentially, right? Or he has an android body.
Well, he has a synthetic...
And a synthetic body,
A synthetic heart? I thought it was a synthetic heart.
Well, he has a whole synthetic body now because they replaced his old body with the new one because he had that syndrome that was killing him from the last episode of Next Generation.
So he's an android. Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And they don't really mention that at all, which is fine, you know. We don't really like it, but let's just kind of ignore it. It's there, but we don't really reference it. You know?
I mean, they bring back Soji. Was it Taj or Soji?
I get him confused, too.
They brought back one of the twin sisters. See, I already forgot that.
One. Right. Well, technically, they're not even in season two very much. The actress is...
Yes, the
actor. But she plays an entirely different character, and I'm sure we'll get there. But no, does it fix everything that I disliked about season two or address it? No. And maybe it's a little bit a shame that it doesn't address it, and maybe we were robbed of a potential second season where Picard has to work through the ramifications of having a synthetic body. But I'm honestly happier that we went in an entirely different direction, completely separate from the storyline of the first season.
So am I. I concur 100%. Oh my gosh, I loved this season. I can't tell you how much I love a season. Did I tell you how much I love this season? I love it. So
that's the podcast, I guess.
Okay, so let's travel back in time. to our, what we thought earlier, I remember telling you, GJ, shortly after season one ended, I remember asking you, you know, what if they brought Q back for the next season? Wouldn't that be interesting? I was like, yeah. A few months later, we're given an announcement that John DeLancey has signed up for season two of Picard, and man, can I cook or can't I?
So, that was called fan service for anyone listening.
You didn't catch that can I cook or can't I reference?
No, yes, that's why I said it's called fan.
Oh.
Continue.
Okay. And that teaser, I lost it. You hear Picard's voice as you're taken through his home. You see his accomplishments, a painting of the Enterprise D. By the way, I want that painting. The Stargazer. I want that Stargazer. And certain nuances, such as the book Paradise Lost and a deck of cards on the table, but the Queen of Hearts is only face up. Then the card disintegrates, except for the letter Q, and you hear, "The trial never ends." My heart nearly bursted out of my chest. Q is back! Oh my god! And
you met John DeLancey.
Yes, I have. Yeah. And it was... should I tell the story or?
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Okay. No. I think this is good. This is a good kind of like segue into.
Okay. So it was Dragon Con 2018. And I mean, I was just roaming around the Hall of Fame area. And then I see John DeLancey. I see Q. I mean, I think there was one or two people there. And I think he was finishing up or something. So I decided, okay, why not? I'll get a picture with him. So I went up to him, it was finally my turn, and he was very nice, was very genuine, and says, "Hi, how are you?" "I'm doing fine." And he asked me, "So what do you do?" And I kind of, at that time, I was semi-joking, but semi-being realistic. I blunt out told him, "Oh, nothing, I'm just a starving artist." But he stopped and looked at me like in a serious look, like, "Uh-oh, did I offend him? Did I do something? What did I do?" And he turned to his helper, Money, and he said to her, "Give her money back." And and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. wait. I tried to stop him. I tried to tell him, whoa, I didn't mean like that. And he goes, "Well, you got to have money. You got to eat. You got to make art. You got to eat so you can make more art." And I was like, well, yeah, but so here's your money back. Yeah, but come on, let's get a picture together. Okay.
That's something. That's hilarious.
I got a picture with him for free on my phone, and it's on my Instagram if you find it. I'm just
like cheesing on it, right?
Cheesing, trying to processing, like, what just happened? I'm like, what?
You have the best stories with these. With these celebrities, I swear. Your Optimus Prime and Peter Cullen story, of course. Your meeting with William Shatner. I don't really.
I mean, William Shatner. Come on, it wasn't that big of a deal. He just.
It was brief, but he was still taken by it.
It was brief. Yeah.
You gave him a portrait of Spock, and you told him. Yeah, I'm sorry you lost your friend.
I did.
And he told, and he was, you're the only person he paused for.
I don't think that's true.
No, I tried to get him to pause for me. Didn't happen. He was like, "Where do I sign?"
I mean, okay. Yeah, actually, I think that was the same year I met DeLancey. No, that was...
That was a year later.
Yeah, that was the year before, later. I think.
But anyway, John DeLancey, he's back as Q.
And yes, I watched interviews of John DeLancey and his thoughts on returning Q, and there are two things that he would not do if he was going to return as Q. One of them was getting back into those tights, and I'm looking back at TNG, what tights? Did you see him wearing tights at one point in an episode?
Well, he wore so many different costumes. I mean, there was the one where he was in
the judge's outfit. Yeah.
Oh, the judge's. Well, there's the judge's outfits. I seem to remember him in some sort of Victorian costume at some point. I seem to remember him in, well, there was the whole Robin Hood.
Yeah, that. Oh, yeah.
When fantasy.
When he was human, he was wearing that uniform.
Right. Yeah. It was like a.
Something Will Wien would have worn.
You know, and I to this day, I'm still not entirely clear, you know, how the uniform actually fit on the actors. I know for the first two seasons, it seemed like a onesie of some sort, but I want to say that the following seasons, when they got the collared uniforms, it was a two-piece.
You think it was a one-piece, like, for the season one?
Was that one? Definitely. It was, like, skin tight, man. Oh, gosh. They were awful. I did not like the season one and two TNG uniforms at all. Like, they looked good once they got the collared
yes, uniforms. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Because they were a little looser, a little baggier, I feel like.
And
they looked more like a uniform.
They seemed more comfortable, too. I mean... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe he's referring to that. I don't
okay.
know.
Okay, okay. And the second one was... He was worried whether they were going to recreate Q back to his usual zany, omnipotent self instead of moving forward with his character. Obviously, his worries were laid to rest when the latter part came out.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, this form of Q made me love the character even more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was the sole reason why I went back and watched TNG all the way through, and everything just seems so much clearer, and I really appreciate Q even more now, the character, mm-hmm. and the actor, obviously. So, but
yeah, yeah. Now, as of this recording, are you finished with Next Generation?
No, because okay. I'm afraid to finish it because I don't want to finish it.
What season are you on?
I'm still on season six. I just finished. Okay. I still finished the episode after Chain of Command Part 2.
Yeah, okay.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Those are...
So Q's back, and he is... As far as we can understand his race, he is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And this has made him a little unhinged. It's made his powers wane, as we see in the second half of Picard. And... The main thing is that he wants to go out teaching Picard one more lesson, making sure Picard has one more thing to be okay with once he's gone. And we'll get to that later, I'm sure. But the mystery as to why he's dying, why this is happening, we never learn. And I want to know, Rebecca, do you feel like we should have learned that, or are you okay just not knowing?
The truth is, I didn't even bother to ask why he was dying. I was more, please don't die.
Okay, so you were more raptured by the story of him dying than you were, like, why?
Right, exactly.
Okay, so, I mean, and that, maybe that's a sign that the story actually did work, is that I'm not too concerned with why. I'm more concerned with, rather, why he's doing what he's doing than why he's dying. You know, why he's losing his powers, we understand, because he is dying. But I was more interested in where this new conundrum was going. And it goes, starting with an incredible first episode, a first episode that I thought was out of the gates better than all of season one of Picard.
Really?
Absolutely. 100%. And it was just, it had everything to kind of pull you in. It had the perfect inciting incident and variables of that. We had a brand new Stargazer, right?
Right.
Picard pulled back into space because something is calling for him specifically. We have the Borg back, you know? the Borg, whenever the Borg wear their heads, of course we perceive them as a threat, but something is off. So once Queen Dr. Octopus jumps on board the Stargazer.
Don't you mean Ursula?
Or Ursula. jumps on board the Stargazer and Picard hits Autodestruct. That's the catalyst for what happens next, which is Q intervening with the destruction of the Stargazer and showing him a world that has been altered to make a point to Picard, to bring Picard somewhere to make a point, right?
Right.
And the first alteration we see, thanks to Q, is a fascist regime, right?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of resulting in the Federation, instead, Earth's history results in this...
Confederation.
Confederation. It was very similar to the Mirror Universe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very similar.
And I thought it was the Mirror Universe at first, but it was very similar to the Mirror Universe where the Terran Empire was all about waging war against different civilizations. But instead, we get another look at an alternate Earth that's a totalitarian. See, I can't say it either, Rebecca. It's fine. Nightmare. And here's where we get into, you know, Star Trek is always about what is current and what is relevant, right?
Right.
And season two of Picard is really just an apex of that, because yes, they're traveling into the stars, and yes, they're traveling into an alternate history, and yes, they travel through time, and through all of that, they take time to learn something about themselves, about their own home and their own civilization, about their history, about their wants and their needs and their desires. And that's Star Trek.
Their own personal final frontier.
Yes. Star Trek, the journey through the stars, isn't just about, you know, going to these different planets and seeing different civilizations. It's about what those civilizations say about us and our culture. And when Picard traveled and his crew traveled to this alternate future, we see an Earth that is...
Still polluted, but...
Polluted, yeah.
Basically, how Q phrased it was just on life support, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And angry enough to take down every other civilization instead of explore them and make peace with them.
Right.
So what does... I'm going to ask you this. What does that say about current events when this season came on?
I feel like I'm going to go really deep into this. So.
Okay, we'll go for it. And I'm going to eat cheese while you do this. That's what you're... Yeah. Hold on. See that? Here.
Yeah.
Wrinkling the cheese. Yep. Cutting the cheese.
Farting. You cut the cheese.
Oh.
And go.
I feel like we live in an era where we're not satisfied with ourselves, so we take it out on the world. We take it out on each other, which is how I saw season two as a whole. If you can't love yourself, how are you able to love others?
Mm.
Picard was unwilling to let himself open up to Laris, in turn unwilling to hear the Borg Queen's requests, in turn to being thrown into an alternative xenophobic universe, in turn to being thrown back in time again, eventually facing himself as a child. I think this season, pardon the phrase, is a giant mirror of us. You want to protest or riot at a certain place, but you find out that it's your house. Would you still do it? You hate this person on the news because they did this or said something on Twitter, but it turns out to be your child's name on the news. Would you still hate that person? You see a sickly old woman trying to enter the States illegally, but it turns out to be your mother or grandmother. Would you still let them in? It wasn't trying to show us how cruel we are to others, but how cruel we are to ourselves and how it affects other people and how we can become better people. And Star Trek always has given us that lesson time and time again. Unfortunately, this is the type of lesson that we keep on repeating over and over again. But I feel like in this season of Picard was telling us, just like Q was telling Picard, it's okay to love yourself. It's okay to let yourself be loved. It's okay to let your walls down for someone you love. And stop being stuck in the past where things could not be fixed and cannot be fixed, and just allow yourself to live in the present and move forward into the future. I just ended the podcast again, didn't I?
You really did. Yeah. And what's funny is my question was specifically about the alternate history, the alternate future that they find themselves in. But I mean, since you're going here,
I mean.
No, and I agree completely. The show, on a personal level for me, the show came at a time where I was very, I think, sensitive to the topic of self-love,
mm-hmm.
self-help, choosing yourself over others and other things. Picard has a long, long, long history of saving the galaxy. We watched him do it for, as of this podcast, we've watched him do it 9 seasons and 4 movies.
What a champion.
Since season 1 of Star Trek Next Generation. And through that time, he sacrificed so much, potentially having a family.
You know,
he could have stayed in the Nexus at one point when his remaining family
had
died.
That's true.
And he could just live with them in this kind of like fantasy world. He lived an entire lifetime with another family. That could have broken him.
The inner light.
The inner light.
Oh, gosh.
He's had his individuality ripped from him and given back, but he's maintained a sort of post-traumatic stress disorder since then.
Mm-hmm.
He's
even undergone torture.
He's undergone torture. He's done a lot for the sake of his career, for the sake of exploration, for the sake of Starfleet, the Federation, innocent lives. And it was interesting to me to see a character who is so used to giving so much to others, but not himself.
Exactly.
And Q finally bringing up the idea that he can choose himself. I think, and we haven't gotten here yet, but I think my favorite episode of the season is definitely the final episode. With the first episode, a close second, just because that hook is incredible. But
yeah.
But the final episode delivers one of the most poignant moments between him and Q. A kind of friendship, kinship that has always sort of been there, but it has often come across as aggressive and annoying.
Yeah.
Particularly to Picard. So I think that Q being the one to say, to give him this gift of choosing himself is a wonderful reminder, not just to the characters, but to the audience, that the sort of, in a world where we are finally starting to understand mental health a little bit better, it was a wonderful gesture towards choosing oneself and helping oneself over other things that normally you would jump to protect or help, right?
Exactly.
Because he could have saved his mother, right?
Right.
He could have saved his mother. And that's part of this whole storyline, is that he has to come to terms with and relive the fact that he inadvertently contributed to his mother's death.
True.
His father would lock his very ill, mentally ill mother in her room so she wouldn't hurt herself. And when a younger Picard unlocked that door, what'd she do?
She committed suicide.
She committed suicide. And the younger Picard was able to unlock that door because there was a hidden key in the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Picard had every chance to remove that key, to make sure that key was there no longer in the time frame that he was in. But he put it back anyway. And at that point, he had, you know, he chose himself over his mother. He chose the future that he created for himself over his mother. I'm sure he wanted to save her. I'm sure he wanted to help her. I'm sure he wanted to create a future where that young Picard has a mom.
Yeah.
But then everything I just spoke about, that incredible life that he lived in those nine seasons and four movies, wouldn't have happened, would it?
No, it would not. And a lot of things would not have occurred, such as the Romulans coming to peace
mm-hmm.
Starfleet.
Right. And to be fair, while it is true that had Picard changed that very important event in his life, it may have shifted the future of his career as well. I don't think Q was doing this because he wanted to make a point that Picard need to be around to save everyone, right? I think he wanted to make the point that Picard was allowed to think about himself, to choose himself, so he could allow himself to be loved.
Exactly, yes. And also, when you're a child and your world is vast, but it's also limited. So I'm pretty sure the audience, I mean, that maybe they do, maybe they don't. I personally do not blame his mother's death on Picard, because that episode, I think it was titled Monsters. That's probably my favorite episode, because that's how like the battleground is on my mind. I'm fighting monsters like anxiety or worries or depression 24/7. And I'm trying to be that superhero for myself to fight off those monsters. So going back to Picard, there were a lot of things that Picard did not know. He did not know that his mother was not well. He did not know that his father truly loved him and his mother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we're kids, we're limited to certain information about certain things, whether it's personal or non-personal. And it wasn't, I don't think it was his fault.
No, I don't think he didn't know better.
Right. He
didn't know better. And you mentioned how, you know, children are just limited to information and whatnot. He didn't understand what was going on. He viewed his father as a villain because he loved his mother so much. But what was really going on was his father was trying to protect his mother from herself.
Right.
That's heavy, right? I mean, it was just something that I didn't see coming, because it sets itself up as kind of like an abusive father situation, which I thought this is where it was going, because I know Patrick Stewart grew up in a home with an abuse in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there was part of him that was playing to that a little bit. But what instead came here was the idea that the father was a good man, just terrified and probably hurting himself.
Yeah.
From the whole situation. So
it just blows up a picture of how scary a mental illness or mental health can be. And that's how it really hit me, because I am fighting monsters. I am running away from monsters.
I think, and we really need to, I need to go into the, I'm looking for the quote.
You humans are like butterflies.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Hold on. We gotta. So Picard asks, why? And Q responds, isn't that the eternal question? And Picard asks, why me? And he says, like, humans' griefs and pains fix them to moments in the past. You're like butterflies with your wings pinned. My old friend, forever the boy who, with an errant turn of a skeleton key, broke the universe in his own heart. No more. You are now unshackled from the past. As I leave you free.
Yeah, I had to rewatch that clip before coming here.
Gosh. It was what a moment to put these two actors in just chairs, right?
Right.
Just two chairs in the middle of the setting facing each other for this just wonderful moment of great dialogue.
If I may, I've noticed that in the room, it's the place where his mother committed suicide. I know, yes. But at the same time, it almost looks similar to like a bird cage almost. And I feel like when, as soon as Q says, as I leave you free, he opens up the cage and
I thought it did have kind of a bird cage aesthetic. Like there should be like birds in there, didn't it? I always kind of wondered. And so when Picard asks, you know, why does all of this matter? Is there something I'm going to do that I'm going to be required for? And Q, asks, must there always be universal stakes, galactic import? You know, it matters to me, he says. You matter to me. Even gods have favorites.
That got me welling up.
And Q says after the fact, well, it's time to go. And Picard says, but not alone. Isn't that what this is all about? And gives him a hug. And Q ends it with saying, see you out there, which were the last things he said to Picard in Next Generation. And all of this comes together. You know, Q wants Picard to know that he can choose himself, that he can help himself. Picard wants Q to know that he isn't alone in death. And that, see you out there is the ultimate phrase of trekking through the stars, of something beyond death, of something beyond our own demise.
Something beyond our own understanding.
Yeah, and something beyond our own understanding, even cues perhaps. It was all wound up in a very emotional goodbye that led to an ending, which I thought was a little trite. I'm not going to lie, but everything that wrapped up with Q and everything that wrapped up thematically with Picard, I think was wonderful this season.
Mm-hmm.
You could make the argument that maybe Picard had gone through this before with Q when there was the episode in Next Generation where Tapestry, where his heart was damaged, his synthetic heart was damaged, and Q showed him, gave him an opportunity to change the past. Picard did. And Picard ended up as kind of this like dreary man in a tedious job, right?
Right.
Instead, yeah. Q gives him the chance to change something. He doesn't change it for himself this time, though. I feel like in Tapestry, Picard made the decision for other people, like he always did in Next Generation, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he changed the future for other people, so he thought. But in Picard season two, he changed it. He decided not to change it for himself. It was a completely different form of a completely different act for the character, for a totally different message that he needed to understand.
Yes, I completely agree with you there. And it's,
I think for me personally, and this is not very objective, but this episode came to me at a point in life where I needed Q's message.
Me too.
I needed to know that it was okay to, let's not frame it as be selfish, but rather take care of yourself,
Right.
I'm not saying I've done nearly the spectacular saves that Picard has in his career, but I don't pay attention to myself. I know that. Okay. And mm-hmm. I established this in our episode, our first episode of season three here.
Wilbur on a cheat day.
On a cheat day. If you want to kind of get an idea of what's been going on in our lives, Wilbur on a cheat day is where what kind of fleshes that out. But it was a message Q gave Picard, and it brought me, I won't say I was in tears, but I was very emotional and welled up at that point. I thought was a very important message. I think it's an important message others need to hear and embrace as well. And perhaps, you know, some people don't need to hear it. Some people are well beyond that point and are at a point in their lives, well, yeah, no duh, you got to take care of yourself. But others do need to hear that. And once again, Star Trek traversed space and alternate dimensions and time just to get to a point that was very personal and very internal, very human. Like the best of Trek normally does.
I feel like this was the most human Q has ever been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was dying and he was scared. And even Guinan, the young Guinan, pointed that out to him, and he says that's what I loathe about you species, empathy. Q was dying, he was scared, and he wanted his death to be worthwhile. He wanted to mean something. He wanted to make sure that the one person that he cared about, the one, dare I say, love, he wanted to be sure that that person was okay, that he would be okay to move on.
That being said, you know, all the characters take a very personal journey. In this, we have Jurati, who was arguably the next most interesting character in this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I connected with Picard, Jurati, and
Jurati. Well, I think there's a lot going on with Jurati. Now, I never was under the impression that Dr. Jurati was so alone. They kind of established this just through dialogue. But the idea that it is established and exploited by the Borg Queen from the alternate future is a very, very interesting take.
They're very similar to each other, despite being completely different. They're both alone. They're in their solitude. And they want to find a connection with someone.
Well, and Jurati definitely wants to find a connection. But the Borg Queen thrives off of those looking to be a part of a collective. So that's...
I mean,
And I also want to bring up that Annie Worshing, who played the Queen this season, wonderful actress who did, I thought, an excellent job of basically playing a torso the majority of the season. Did a wonderful job taking over from Alice Krieg?
Krieg, I think.
And it is unfortunate that just days ago we discovered that she actually passed away fighting cancer.
Yeah.
But she had a wonderful impact on this season. And I do believe that she, along with Jurati, Agnes Jurati, were two of the best parts of this, because I did not see this coming at all. I did not see where the story was coming. I thought they were going to just be done with the Borg Queen and that's that. But she ended up being a very prominent force that really played in and tied into the final episode.
Exactly. And going back to mental health awareness and such, I feel like the Borg Queen, well, there's a lot of mental issues with the Borg Queen, let's be honest, but
this is where I wish JR was here.
Yeah. But I get what you mean, that the Borg Queen thrives off being a ruler of a collection. What did you say again?
Thrives off of looking for people, exploiting those who want to be a part of something.
That's right. Yeah. And maybe,
which is what she definitely did here. I would definitely say, in terms of mental health, the Queen was not helpful. She was manipulating and exploiting Jurati's, you know, mental weaknesses and shortcomings.
Right. But even those, I'm not that I'm siding with the Borg Queen or anybody with the same mentality as her. No, of course not. But even those that are doing harm have also possibly have gone through hurt and challenges and took wrong turns and ended up becoming horrible beings like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was Jurati's light, inner light, that kind of made the Boar Queen look twice, thinking, wait, it's possible I can do that instead of doing this? And I mean, it's always possible to change someone's mind through your actions for good.
Right. So essentially the queen infects Jurati, and Jurati slowly becomes the next Borg queen. And which, again, I did just not believe that was the twist that they stuck with. And
or Ursula.
And of course, it turns out that she was, you know, Doc Ock.
Doc on the Ock's Stargazer. And Ursula's love child.
Or there. Ursula or whatever.
Bam.
Now, here's Got the thing. It. Here's the problem I have is... I did find it really contrived that she arrives on the Stargazer with this kind of headpiece keeping her identity secret. Because I'm sitting there going, well, why? You know, why? They literally just had that so they could make that big reveal at the tail end. Look, it's actually Agnes, the queen. And I thought that was silly. But that being said, they did what they did. You know, I still don't understand why Agnes just didn't say right out the gates, hey, by the way, it's me. don't blow up your freaking ship. Might have saved a little time.
Maybe she was about to, but Q beat her to it. Up too slow.
It's kind of a big plot hole, right? Like, why didn't you just say, hey, you're not going to believe this, but we really need your help.
Yeah.
But instead she goes in and acts like she's attacking the Stargazer, and it was really convenient for the story for that to go that way. But what's done is done. It happened. For me, it doesn't hurt the season too much because there are so many interesting thematic things in it. And I still do like the fact that Jurati became the next queen, a faction of the Borg that is not
exactly
like the other Borg in the Delta
cooperation
Quadrant.
Instead of assimilation.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So it's this kind of rogue Borg faction that has decided to help different cultures across the galaxy until, you know, hey, we need to head back to the Alpha Quadrant and, you know, semi-assimilate the Stargazer to help these guys out.
We should probably ask for permission.
Right?
No, they'll be fine.
No, that'll be fine. We'll just do it right out of the gate. Which, of course, brings up other plot holes. Like, you know, where were they when Voyager was lost? Why couldn't they help them out? Where were they when the best of both worlds happened? there are some major holes there. And I am going to ignore them right now. But it is problematic. I just want to at least acknowledge that it creates some logic flaws, which Star Trek has never had any of those.
Never.
So, but as far as crafting a character that goes in a direction I didn't expect, and a direction that I thought really was really interesting for what was initially a very timid character.
Yeah.
I think it works. I think it works.
Talk about character development.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I feel like saying, oh, character development, it's almost a pedestrian way of critiquing characters these days. Everyone feels that the only purpose, the only way to write a good character is if that character has very vivid character development. And I'm getting a little tired of those two words being clumped together. And this isn't a shot at you, Rebecca. It's just that isn't there so much more to look at than saying, oh yeah, the character was developed well. Look at the journeys these characters went through. Look at everything Picard went through to get to the point where Q told him what was up. Look at where what Jurati went through. you know,
they've matured. They've become what they were supposed to be.
They have journeyed. They have trekked. They have gone through a transformation, both of them, to go into the next phase of their lives. Even Rios, and Rios is a little hard for me because, you know, at the end of the series, he says he never felt like he belonged in Starfleet. And that's why he decides to stay behind. Now, in the Star Trek continuity, I thought this was really dumb. In the Star Trek continuity, they're in 2024, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So World War III starts in 2026.
Which, by the way, we're still in 2023. 2024 hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah. No, but 2 years later, World War III happens. For like 25-something years, World War III happens until First Contact. I wouldn't want to live through that. I don't understand his decision to stay there. He was the captain of a Stargazer. He seemed perfectly content at the beginning of the season. I don't entirely buy that he was so easily swayed by the Doctor and his her child.
I was under the impression that the Doctor, Teresa, and her son were Rio's ancestors, but
I thought they were going in that direction too.
But
guess not.
Well, actually, you never know.
No. I will give it up for Seven and Raffi actually having a developed relationship this time.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too.
Okay, yeah.
Actually, my first thought about Seven and Raffi, my first thought about that was feeling sorry for the Doctor from Voyager, because I understand that he and Seven must have had a thing going on.
Well, the Doctor was in love with Seven.
Okay. All right.
The Doctor admitted he was in love with Seven. And to this day, I still think Seven and the Doctor should have been the couple that got together.
Well, then I hear that Seven and Chakotay had a thing.
Okay, yeah. And that was the worst left field relationship. I'm sorry. Go on.
I feel like, okay. I mean, being lost in the Delta Quadrant and not getting back for a little over 70 years or something, I was starting to think that maybe there have been a few sexual tensions on Voyager. Just one or two. You know?
Yeah. And they do address that in a few episodes.
I mean, getting tired of each other, but at the same time, they're like, I need you. But...
Look at Tom and B'Elanna.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah. They hated each other at first.
At first, I wasn't sure about Seven and Raffi getting together, and I thought it was a bit rushed, but at the same time, they were all in a rush, trying to fix a timeline, getting back home, blah, blah, blah. And then after hearing the episode of our very first episode, I hear Dave talk about how Seven was becoming more and more human, and she was still in search of her identity. And after she was disconnected from the Borg, the crew of the Voyager were the only people or sense of society or family she's ever known. And once that was over and outside of that, she had to journey the universe by herself to find out who she really is and what she really wants. And I think she finally found that in Raffi being the final or main missing puzzle, missing piece in her puzzle, which made me think, okay, all right, that makes sense. I get it. That's fine. And the last time we saw Raffi, she was what, an alcoholic with an estranged son and a grudge towards Picard. And, but in this season, she finally got her feet back on the ground until Q had to F it up. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say that. We'll put a up there anyway.
But it's Q and F, you know? See what I did there? See? Q, F. Yeah, Q, F'd it up. So, back at the...
J.R.
Just one little button, and our audio just disappears. Oh no, I have no idea what happened to it. Must have got lost in the editing.
Where are you?
So, yeah, I'm okay with Seven and Raffi being together. In fact, I'm more than okay. I'm happy that they're together.
No, and I've been thinking a lot about Dave's words from the first episode, too. That makes sense for Seven, is what he said.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And this is the best developed romantic relationship Seven has had. I thought the Chakotay thing was dumb.
I feel like this dumb. Is probably the only developed and healthy relationship Seven has had. Well, that's not true.
Well, no. That's not true.
She and Janeway, that was a healthy relationship.
That was a healthy relationship. Her and the doctor.
Her and the doctor. Who else?
I'd say largely the other members of the Voyager crew were very kind to her all the time.
Right. And they understood her condition and her.
Well, they learned to love her. My issue is that, the Chakotay thing came out of left field, but so much emphasis was put on their relationship for Chakotay's mental health that it's kind of funny that in the Prime timeline, apparently they don't work out, and Chakotay looks perfectly fine being captain of the USS Protostar, and she goes her own way. it's weird that there's a great emphasis that in an alternate timeline, Seven died and Chakotay basically died of depression. But in the main timeline, the Prime timeline,
they just break up and they're fine.
Yeah, they just break up. They're fine. And then at the end of Picard season one, Seven and Raffi getting together made no sense. There was nothing there. There may have been a look, maybe a word or two expressed. Nothing was there otherwise. I couldn't have possibly thought of something worse than the Chakotay and Seven of Nine relationship until that. Because there was no lead-in whatsoever. There was less lead-in than the Chakotay relationship.
You're really up and about that whole Chakotay and Seven thing.
It was so dumb. Why wasn't it the doctor? But
I feel like you need to express yourself a little bit more on that one, JJ, and don't hold yourself back.
It was a bad decision. Anyway, but the relationship between her and Raffi here, I bought a lot more. Apparently they had a relationship, didn't go too well, and now they're mending it together little by little. And as they mend it together, Seven finds a sort of confidence in herself to be more accepting, to perhaps try to be a part of families that had initially rejected her. Because she even said, Janeway tried to get her into Starfleet, but it didn't work. And you got to think, the Starfleet must really, really hate the Borg because they let Prodigy, the main character's name. What is his main character's name?
I keep forgetting it.
Dal. Yeah. They let Dal into the Federation, into the Starfleet, and they don't allow augments. And Janeway was able to argue that away, but they wouldn't take her argument to let Seven into Starfleet. So I'm glad that in season three, we see Seven is finally in Starfleet, but it was interesting that Starfleet had no interest in her beforehand. And it really gave us that sense of pride for her when she takes the captain's chair in the Stargazer in that last episode. I was very happy to see her take charge with that.
Right.
So, the Seven thing, I'm glad she finally has a more developed romantic relationship with someone. I felt like it didn't pan out quite as well for Raffi's character.
Yeah, I was wondering, what about her son? What about, did she reconnect with her son or?
And that's just it, Rebecca. I think her son is just another casualty of season two, essentially ignoring a lot of season one.
Okay.
They wanted to go a different direction. They didn't want to follow up on certain character ideas that were introduced in season one, and probably for good reason. You know, season one started pretty strong, ended it, what I felt was very poorly. And season two had to pick up with the same characters, but doing something different with them. Or even the same actors, but doing something different with them. You know,
right?
Because the actress that plays Laris is playing Talon for much of the season, you know?
Yeah, that is true. A lot of actresses are playing their ancestors or descendants. I mean, they really do look alike.
Well, and I kind of wonder, is Talon is the protector of Renee Picard.
Right.
And she made it seem like she had been looking after Renee for a very long time. Talon had made it out that she had been looking after Renee for a very long time. And it makes me think, well, when did she have time to have a family then? Because it's never really confirmed if Talon isn't an ancestor of Laris. We only assume that because they look alike. There was never really an explanation.
Yeah, that is true. Well, maybe Talon had a sister or brother, and that was probably her great aunt or something. I mean, Renee Picard, she didn't have a family. That's Picard's great aunt. So
that's true. That's very true. Yeah. Then we come to Dr. Soon.
Oh boy.
Another Dr. Soon.
Oh god. How many Soons are there?
Let's count. So we have here's the Soonian, the Soon line. All right. You have Adam Soon, who's in 2024 in Star Trek Picard.
Okay.
And his descendant is Eric Soon, who showed up in episodes of
Enterprise.
Star Trek Enterprise, yeah.
Yep.
Then you have Noonien Soon, who was Data and Lore's and B4's creator. And then you have his son, Alton Soon, who we saw at the tail end of Picard season one, who I felt was not a character the franchise needed at all.
Has anybody ever realized that
they all
look alike?
So, you know, a fan once asked, why do all of the Soons look alike? And Brent Spiner comes out and says, because I play all of them. So Adam Soon, in this case, is working to create basically a super soldier, right?
Right.
His daughter means very little to him. She's just an experiment. There's been plenty before her. And
Corey, I believe is her name.
Corey, yeah. And he is willing to do anything for, you know, the right cure for her. So not out of love for her, but in order to become this great geneticist. And it's even inferred that in the alternate future, it is the world ends up leaning on him because there's this big statue of him in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, he wants that future. He wants to be the one that the world leans on. And he's willing to stop Renee Picard from completing her mission, no matter the cost. And that's where Picard and Talon come in to protect her and to protect the future. Of course, Picard succeeds because he is a Jean-Luc Picard. And that leads Adam Soon pulling out this this old folder that says Project Khan.
I lost it at that one. I was like, what?
You may here's where the discrepancy comes. Khan was, I believe, launched into space in the Botany Bay in 1996. Okay.
Really?
This is 2025. So there's two explanations. The first explanation is this is just a plot hole. Okay.
They forgot.
Yeah, they forgot. Yeah, and it's a plot hole. Or Project Khan doesn't necessarily mean that he created Khan, but is going to create the future augments. Okay? Bear with me. His descendant, who is Eric Soon, is the one who created the augments in Star Trek Enterprise.
Right. And
those augments were created based off of, you know, the idea of Khan as well.
Okay.
So my headcanon here, and I don't know if we can, I'm sure Trek fans can argue about this all day. My headcanon here is that Project Khan led to the augments in Enterprise, not Khan.
I see.
Based on studies from Khan during the eugenics war in the '90s. So that I hope that offers some
maybe some not a plot hole.
For some fans, probably not. But it's what I'm going to think in my head. Okay.
I mean, it's that's probably the most logical thing I've heard about.
But that. Anyway, it while this new Adam Soong was basically just a reason to put Brent Spiner into the plot. And let's be honest, I love seeing Spiner stay in Star Trek.
I mean, you can't have Star Trek without Brent Spiner. Let's face it.
These next generation stories, I mean, like, it's great to see him in these different roles, because I truly did not see, the guy who plays Data in this role. I truly did see Adam Soong.
I did too. Yeah, he played a completely different person. Like, I was not expecting his character to be evil. I thought he was going to, like, side with Picard after seeing those trailers, but it turns out he's a despicable person. He's horrible. Like, yeah. I mean.
Well, and the Soongs have always kind of skirted in this gray area. You know, I mean, Noonien Soong was never a saint. Eric Soong, in a lot of ways, I found to be the most interesting of them. And Adam Soong was just flat out mean. he just wanted power, you know?
Right.
I think just he just wanted power. So it was definitely good to have him in the story. He was definitely an excellent foil, an excellent villain for Picard to go up against.
Yeah.
Whereas Q was basically just the instigator for all this. So.
And his line, "I am death, the destroyer of worlds."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brings me chills.
Well, Rebecca, what are some final thoughts you have on the show?
My final thoughts of the show was that I loved it, and you and I both needed it more than we ever thought. Yeah. And I'm gonna miss Q. but at the same time, there was this recent interview, another interview John Delancey had, and it was about season 3. And I'm thinking to myself, what do you know about season 3? Then again, you told me that they filmed both season 2 and season 3 side by side, so he must have, I don't know, had a look in it or took a peek in it.
Maybe. I don't know. Or you know what? The showrunner for season 3 has also said that he's still keeping some surprise guest stars close to the vest. So, who knows?
Okay.
Who knows?
What do you know, John? What do you know?
My view on Picard season 2 is that it's a substantial step up from the first season.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the be-all, end-all season I was hoping it would be. I still think there's some massive logic flaws in there that were done mainly just for story convenience. You know, if you want to ignore the larger kind of Star Trek universe to kind of tell your story, that's fine. But also give decent reasoning for why things are happening within the confines of your own story as well. For example, I don't understand why Queen Jurati didn't just, you know, show herself in the first episode. But it did lead to a fun, kind of cool and surprising twist. Thematically, I think it was infinitely stronger than the first season. Mm-hmm. And some of the exchange of dialogue between Picard and Q in that last episode are some of the best lines in Star Trek.
Yes.
And I do think the season truly embraces what Star Trek is about in the sense of exploration, not just of space and time, but of where that leads us to explore ourselves. And I am very excited to see season 3, which brings back the entire Next Generation cast for one final adventure.
Mm-hmm. I want to point out, you can put this at the plot hole edits, but I want to point out something, and it's Guinan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. We forgot Guinan was
there. I forgot Guinan. Well, and...
Here's the thing. No, hear me out. Here's the thing. Okay, so in 2024, Picard goes back in time and sees Guinan. She doesn't know who he is. However,
yep.
And Star Trek Next Generation, they went like back in during the era of Mark Twain, literally. Uh-huh. And
Time Zero.
And Guinan was there. And she did not know Picard then. Actually, that was the first time she met Picard.
She met Picard, right.
But then why didn't she recognize him in 2024?
So the writer's explanation, and this is flimsy, the writer's explanation is that they are existing in a future where the Confederation exists.
Uh-huh.
They're existing in a timeline where the Confederation exists.
Right.
Which means that Picard on board the Enterprise D never went back in time to see Guinan. It also means that Kirk and Spock never went back in time to save Wales.
Okay. Uh-huh. I mean,
that still doesn't explain why Guinan looks older back with Mark Twain than she does when in 2024.
Yeah. Why does she look younger?
Yeah, I don't.
I mean,
that's also a very inconsistent flaw, I think. And I don't know if they really thought about Time's Arrow when they were constructing that storyline.
Yeah, and I didn't know think what.
I
was just glad to see Guinan, but...
Yeah, here's my thing. It's annoying, kind of, but at the same time, when you have a franchise this old with this many stories, this many hundreds, thousand episodes, this many movies, and so many different people working on each of them, there's going to be a lot of inconsistencies down the road. Okay. You know, at this point, you know, we have in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the Enterprise and Captain Pike look completely different than what the Enterprise and Captain Pike look like in the original series.
True.
Okay.
True. Yeah.
Whatever. Fine. Just accept it as an aesthetic, a creative aesthetic decision. Okay.
Uh-huh.
That's okay. And I'm going to just accept the younger Guinan as a creative aesthetic decision. Maybe that's what they want. They assume the younger Guinan looked like when she was with Mark Twain as well. Okay.
Okay.
Think of it like, here's one for you. Okay. Here it is for you. Gundam Wing Endless Waltz.
Yeah.
The Gundams look different. Yeah. In Endless Waltz than they do in the show. And we just accept that they had always looked like that. Okay? This young Guinan in 2024, maybe we just accept that she always looked like that.
Okay. All right. You know? That makes sense. Okay.
Can we at least go with that?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sure.
I'm fishing here. I'm making excuses. I'm not saying that there aren't inconsistencies with this season. There are.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to flag them for creative decisions based on this confined story's well-being.
I feel like Janeway when you're talking about space-time continuum. I need my coffee. What was that one episode? Wait a minute. So you want to go back in time and capture this guy, but he's already here and he's captured. Well, yeah. But
we actually have another one in the brig as well.
Okay.
And seven? Oh, don't worry. There will just be 2 sevens after all is done. Okay, let's just get this over with. My headache gets any worse. I'm not.
God. I don't.
It's bad enough we have time travel in Star Trek, and now they're just making us more confused with like these different aesthetics going on.
I know.
Oh, well.
Whatever. I still like season 2.
Yeah, me too. It was enjoyable and an improvement.
So yes, very much improved.
Had some problems, but still an improvement. All right, Fanboy 50. All right, you going to time me?
Hang on. Okay. All right, Mark, get set, go.
Right, I'm going to steal this before Rebecca figures it out. Star Trek Picard Season 3. The final trailer, dropped during not the Super Bowl. We haven't had the Super Bowl yet. It dropped during a football game last week. And it was only like a 30-second version of the trailer, but then the full one came out. I am so excited. As you're listening to this episode, we are just days away from the premiere of Season 3. We cannot wait to watch it. We cannot wait for the Next Generation cast to get back together. We are being promised a lot here. And the fact that it's being hyped up as much as it is by Paramount is giving me high hopes. And I really hope it can deliver once it airs this coming Thursday.
Time.
Man, I nailed that.
Yeah, you made it.
There we go.
Hold on.
All right, you ready?
Okay, I'll do my best.
All right, here we go. There you mark. Get set. Go.
So in light of talking about Picard Season 2 and my old-found love for Q, I read my very first Star Trek novel called IQ, and it was written by John DeLancey and another dude. I'm so sorry. The point is the book was great. It's an adventure of Q and his family and how they disappeared, and Picard and Data help find his family, and I look at Q at a whole different
time.
Yeah, okay, fine.
You know, you bring up something though. I wonder, now that Q's gone, I wonder what ever became of his son.
Well, he became a diplomat. No, wait, that's in real life. Never mind.
What?
Apparently I heard something that his actual son, who played his son as Q, that was actually his son.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, that was actually his son. Yeah.
I had no idea that actor was actually his son. Okay.
Yeah, and now he mentioned at a convention, someone asked him, so what's little Q doing? It's like, well, he's a diplomat. So, oh, okay.
Whatever that means. Google it.
I'm sure.
Sorry. It's your podcast, after all.
You may podcast. Well, that pretty much wraps things up with our discussion of Star Trek Picard Season 2. I'm your host, Rebecca, and you can find me on the Linktree app at linktr.ee/reb.hudge. And remember, my commissions are always open for podcasters.
And I'm G. I can be found on Twitter at gmanofmysterioid and on Substack at markalite.substack.com. You can also find JR on his Twitter at littleman_says1, on Instagram, littlemancosplays, and on TikTok, littlemansays. Also, be sure to check out the Drift Space Gaming series on YouTube at the Drift Space Gaming and on Twitch TV, Drift Gaming 4.
And we are, in fact, the Drift Space. Take a look at our show at bit.ly/TDSlinks, where you can find us on all your favorite podcatchers. If you dug this episode, make sure you share it with friends, repost, retweet, and rewind us. You can also say hello on our socials at The Drift Space. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for playing along, and remember, always stay strapped.
Stay strapped!
See you out there.